people, it seems, always have an extra dash of energy for just about any task they want to undertake. What's the secret? How do they do it? In this lesson, entitled Tune Into the Infinite, Dr. Peel talks about the source of all energy and how to tap into its boundless power.
A Major League Baseball pitcher once played a long game when the temperature was over 100 degrees. He lost several pounds as a result of the afternoon's exertion, and at one stage of the game, his energy was severely depleted. But this man had a unique method for restoring energy. He simply repeated a passage from the Old Testament. But they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary, and they shall walk and not faint. The pitcher completed the game with energy to spare. He explained the technique by saying, I sent a powerful energy-producing thought through my mind. As this baseball player discovered, prayer has the power to alter not only our attitudes, but our energy level as well. How we think we feel physically has a definite effect on how we actually feel. If your mind tells you that you're tired, the nerves and the muscles accept that as a fact. If your mind is intensely interested in something, you can keep on with an activity indefinitely. In the same way, our spiritual life functions through our thoughts, especially when we pray. When you tell yourself that you have powerful internal resources, you supply attitudes of faith to your mind. Such attitudes increase your energy and your well-being. A friend of mine, a man full of vitality and vigor, says that he goes to church regularly to get his batteries recharged. His concept is sound. God is the source of all energy. Atomic energy, electrical energy, spiritual energy. Indeed, every form of energy derives from the Creator. The Bible emphasizes this point when it says, He giveth power to the faint, and to them that have no might, He increaseth strength. And here's how the Bible describes life's energizing and re-energizing process. In Him, we live and move and have our being. In other words, from God we receive our vitality and our dynamic energy, and through Him we attain completeness. Contact with God establishes within us a flow of the same type of energy that recreates the world, that renews springtime every year. When we're in spiritual contact with God through our thoughts, divine energy flows through us and automatically renews the original creative act. It's not unlike an electric clock connected to an outlet. The clock continues to keep time until it's unplugged. Then it stops because it has lost contact with its source of power. When we lose contact with our divine source of energy, much the same thing happens. We can tap into a reservoir of boundless power, and from this source, we can draw on unlimited energy for body and mind. A friend of mine, a man whose responsibilities are very heavy, works from morning until night without interruption, but this fellow always seems able to assume new obligations. Most importantly, he has the knack of handling his work easily and efficiently. One day I happened to be talking with his physician, and I commented that I hoped this man wasn't setting a dangerous pace that could lead to a breakdown. The doctor shook his head. No, he replied, I don't think there's any danger of a crack-up. The reason is that he's a thoroughly well-organized individual with no energy leaks in his makeup. He handles things with easy power and carries burdens without strain. He never wastes an ounce of energy. Every effort is applied with maximum force. When asked to account for this seemingly boundless energy and efficiency, the physician stated, "He's emotionally well integrated, and what's more important, he is a soundly religious person. His religion provides him with a workable mechanism for preventing energy leaks. It isn't hard work that drains off energy, but emotional upheaval, and this man is entirely free from that." More and more people are realizing that the maintenance of a sound spiritual and emotional life is an important factor in the enjoyment of a forceful personality. If proper attention is given to the spirit and the emotions, energy will be conserved. But if emotional reactions are not kept in balance, you will begin to see a drain on your vital force. When body, mind, and spirit work harmoniously, there is a natural and continuous replacement of necessary energy. It was the custom of Thomas A. Edison, the world's greatest inventive wizard, to come home from his laboratory after many hours of labor and lie down on his old couch. His wife said he would fall asleep as naturally as a child. In perfect relaxation, he would sink into a deep and untroubled slumber. After 3 to 5 hours, he would become instantly wide awake, completely refreshed, and eager to return to his work. When she was asked to analyze her husband's ability to rest in such a natural and complete manner, Mrs. Edison said, "He was nature's man." By that she meant that he was completely in harmony with nature and with God. He was free from obsessions, disorganization, conflict, mental quirks, and emotional instability. He worked until he needed to sleep, then he slept soundly, arose, and returned to his work. He lived a long life, and was in many respects the most creative mind ever to appear on the American continent. He drew his energy from emotional self-mastery, the ability to relax completely, his amazingly harmonious relationship with the universe caused nature to reveal to him its inscrutable secrets. Every great personality I have ever known, and I have known many, who has demonstrated the capacity for prodigious work, has been a person in tune with the infinite. Every such person seems in harmony with nature and in contact with divine energy. They haven't necessarily been pious people, but invariably they have been extraordinarily well organized from an emotional and psychological point of view. It is fear, resentment, inner conflicts, and obsessions that throw us off balance and thus cause the expensive and unnecessary expenditure of natural force. We are at last awakening to the close relationship between religion and health. We are beginning to comprehend a basic truth that our physical condition is determined very largely by our emotional condition, and our emotional life is profoundly regulated by our thought life. All through its pages, the Bible talks about vitality and force and life. The supreme overall word of the Bible is life, and life means vitality, to be filled with energy. Jesus stated the key expression, "I am come that they might have life, and that they might have it more abundantly." Or as one version has it, "I am come that they might have life and have it in all its fullness." This does not rule out pain or suffering or difficulty, but the clear implication is that if a person practices the creative and recreative principles of Christianity, he can live with power and energy. It's important to note that the practice of these principles will bring a person into the proper tempo of living. Our energies are frequently destroyed because of the abnormally high pace at which we go about our lives. To conserve energy, you must get your personality speed synchronized with the rate of God's movement. God is in you. If you are going at one rate and God at another, you will tear yourself apart. Though the mills of God grind slowly, yet they grind exceedingly small. The mills of most of us grind very rapidly, and so they grind poorly. When we become attuned to God's rhythm, we develop a normal tempo within ourselves, and energy flows freely. The hectic habits of this age have many disastrous effects. Everything is speeded up, and for that reason, many people feel unnecessarily tired. The solution is to get into the time synchronization of Almighty God. One way to do this is by going out some warm day and lying down on the earth. Get your ear close down to the ground and listen. You will hear all manner of sounds. You will hear the movement of the spheres, the wind in the trees, and the murmur of insects. You will discover presently that there is in all these sounds a well-regulated tempo. You cannot get that tempo by listening to traffic in the city streets, for it is lost in the confusion of sound. You can get it in church, where you hear the word of God and the great hymns. Truth vibrates to God's tempo in a church, but you can also find it in a factory, if you have a mind to. To get yourself in tune with the rhythm of God, first allow yourself to relax physically. Then conceive of your mind as also relaxing. Then visualize the soul as becoming quiescent, and pray as follows. Dear God, you are the source of all energy. You are the source of energy in the sun, in the atom, in all flesh, in the bloodstream, in the mind. I hereby draw energy from you as from an unlimited source. Then practice believing that you do receive energy. Keep in tune with the infinite. Of course, many people are tired simply because they aren't interested in anything. Nothing ever moves them deeply. To some people, it makes no difference what's going on or how things go. Their personal concerns are more important than all crises in human history. Nothing makes any real difference to them except their own little worries, desires, and hates. They wear themselves out by stewing about a lot of inconsequential things that amount to nothing. The surest way not to become tired is to lose yourself in something in which you have a profound conviction. A famous statesman finished his 7th speech of the day and still had energy to spare. I asked him why he wasn't tired, and he said, "I believe absolutely in everything I said in those speeches. I'm enthusiastic about my convictions." And that's the secret. He was on fire for something. He was pouring himself out, and you never lose energy and vitality in so doing. You only lose energy when life becomes dull in your mind. When you're doing nothing, your mind gets bored, and then you feel tired. But you don't have to be tired. Get interested in something. Get absolutely enthralled in something. Throw yourself into it with abandon. Get out of yourself. Be somebody. Do something. Don't sit around moaning about things, reading the paper, saying, "Why don't they do something?" The person who is out doing something isn't tired. The more you get absorbed in something bigger than yourself, the more energy you will have. You won't have time to think about yourself and get bogged down in your emotional difficulties. Another frequent cause of diminishing energy is staleness. The pressure, monotony, and unceasing continuity of responsibilities dull the freshness of mind which a person must have to approach his work successfully. During such dry periods, you have to expend much more energy to do with difficulty what you once did with comparative ease. A solution for this state of mind was employed by a businessman, the president of the board of trustees of a certain university. A professor who had once been outstanding and extraordinarily popular began to slip in teaching ability and in the power to stimulate his students. It was the verdict of the students, as well as the private opinion of the trustees, that this teacher must either recover his former teaching abilities, or it would be necessary to replace him. The professor was told that the Board of Trustees was giving him a 6 months' leave of absence with all expenses paid and with full salary. There was only one stipulation, that he go away to a place of rest and give himself over to gaining a complete renewal of strength and energy. The president of the board invited him to use a cabin which he himself owned in a wilderness setting, and made the curious suggestion that he take no books except one, the Bible. He suggested that the professor's daily program be walking, fishing, some manual work in the garden, and an extended period of reading the Bible. He encouraged the professor to memorize as many passages as possible in order to saturate his mind with the great words and ideas which the book contains. He said, "I believe that if you spend 6 months outdoors chopping wood, digging in the soil, reading the Bible, and fishing in deep lakes, you will become a new man." The professor agreed to this unique proposal. His adjustment to this radically different mode of life was an easier one than he or anyone who knew him expected. In fact, he was surprised to find that he actually liked it. After he became accustomed to active outdoor living, he discovered it had an immense appeal for him. He missed his intellectual associates and his reading for a while, but forced back upon the Bible, his only book, he became immersed in it. To his amazement, he found the Bible to be, as he put it, a library within itself. In the pages of the Bible, he found faith and peace and power. In 6 months, he was a new man. When he returned to teaching, his colleagues and students found him a person of compelling power and exciting inspiration. His staleness had gone, and the old-time energy returned. The spiritual retreat caused his power to surge again and renewed his zest for living.
Here are a few suggestions for increasing your energy and vitality. 1. Remember, how you think you feel physically has a definite effect on how you actually feel. Tell yourself frequently that you have powerful internal resources. 2. God is the source of all energy. To tap into this boundless reservoir, repeat this affirmation. He giveth power to the faint, and to them that have no might, he increases strength. 3. Try to stay in harmony with nature and in contact with divine energy. People who are free of fear, resentment, inner conflicts, and obsessions have an abundance of energy because they don't waste their precious emotional resources. 4. Get interested in something. People frequently feel tired because they aren't on fire for something outside their own small circle of interests. 5. Rejuvenate your spirit by taking yourself away from daily routines. take along a Bible as your companion. In a chaotic world, a sense of inner harmony is increasingly difficult to achieve. And yet, tranquility is essential to both physical and emotional well-being. In this section, entitled, A Peaceful Mind Generates Power, you will learn one of the most important characteristics of a happy and successful person, peace of mind.
How often have you found yourself complaining about how poorly you slept the night before? That you went to bed with an ear full of trouble? Given the choice, wouldn't you rather fall asleep with a mind full of peace? The secret to a mind full of peace lies in one's mental attitude. The life of strain is very difficult. On the other hand, the life of inner peace, being harmonious and without stress, is the easiest type of existence. It is a life which accepts God's gift of peace and embraces the attitude of relaxed trust in Him. The first technique recommended is to practice emptying the mind. I cannot emphasize enough the importance of a frequent mental catharsis. This means clearing the mind of fears, hates, insecurities, regrets, and guilt. The mere attempt to empty the mind tends to give relief. Haven't you ever experienced a welcome sense of release when you've poured out your troubles to somebody you can trust? One effective method for doing this is the daily practice of silence. Everyone should insist upon at least 15 minutes of absolute silence every day. Go alone into the quietest place available and sit or lie down. Do not talk, do not write, do not read. Think as little as possible. Conceive of your mind as the surface of a body of water and see how nearly quiet you can make it so that there isn't even a ripple. When you've attained a quiescent state, begin to listen for the deeper sounds of harmony and beauty and of God that are to be found in the essence of silence. I was once conducting a religious service on an ocean liner on a voyage to Hawaii. In the course of my talk, I suggested that people who were carrying worries in their minds go to the stern of the vessel and imaginatively take each anxious thought out and drop it into the ocean and watch it disappear in the wake of the ship. It seemed an almost childlike suggestion. But a man who had quite a no-nonsense manner came to me later that day and said, "You know something? Every evening at sunset, as long as this voyage lasts, I'm going to drop all my worries overboard until I develop the ability to cast them entirely out of my consciousness at will. Every day I shall watch them disappear in the great ocean of time." Doesn't the Bible say something about forgetting those things that are behind? Of course, just emptying the mind is not enough to prevent those old unhappy thoughts from sneaking in again. You must refill the mind immediately with creative and healthy thoughts. These happy thoughts will stand guard when the old fears, hates, and worries that used to haunt you try to edge back in again. At intervals during the day, practice thinking a carefully selected series of peaceful thoughts. Let mental pictures of the most peaceful scenes you have ever witnessed pass across your mind. For example, you might see a beautiful valley filled with the hush of evening time as the shadows lengthen and the sun sinks to rest. Or you could recall the silvery light of the moon falling upon rippling waters, or the sea washing gently upon soft shores of sand. Serene images like these will work upon your mind as a healing medicine. You might also practice the techniques of repeating beautiful words out loud. Words have profound suggestive power, and there is healing in the very saying of them. Utter a series of panicky words, and your mind will immediately go into a mild state of nervousness. You will perhaps feel a sinking in the pit of your stomach that soon affects your entire body. If, on the other hand, you speak peaceful, quieting words, your mind will react in a peaceful manner. Use such words as, for example, tranquility. Repeat the word slowly several times. Tranquility is one of the most beautiful and melodic of all English words, and the mere saying of it tends to induce a tranquil state. It is also helpful to use lines from poetry. When peaceful quotations are dropped in the subconscious, they lubricate the mind with peace. Here is one from a 16th century mystic. Let nothing disturb you. Let nothing frighten you. Everything passes away except God. God alone is sufficient. The words of the Bible have a particularly strong therapeutic value. Drop them into the mind, allowing them to dissolve in consciousness, and they will spread a healing balm over your entire being. For attaining peace of mind, this is one of the simplest things to do, and also one of the most effective. There are other practical ways by which you can develop a serene state of mind. One way is through your conversations. Depending upon the words we use and the tone in which we use them, we can talk ourselves into being nervous, high-strung, and upset. But by our speech, we can also achieve quiet reactions. Talk peaceful to be peaceful. You see, the words we speak have a direct and definite effect upon our thoughts. So in a group, when the conversation takes an upsetting trend, try injecting peaceful ideas into the talk. Note how it counteracts the tension. A conversation filled with unhappy expectation, at breakfast, for example, often sets the tone of the entire day. On the other hand, if you start each day by affirming peaceful attitudes, your days will tend to be pleasant and successful. Perhaps our lack of inner peace is due in part to the effect of today's increased levels of noise. Research indicates that certain amounts of noise in the place we work, live, or sleep affects the nervous system and reduces efficiency. Contrary to popular belief, it is doubtful if we ever completely adjust to some noises. No matter how familiar a repeated sound becomes, it never passes unheard by the subconscious. Automobile horns, the roar of airplanes, and other strident noises actually result in physical activity during sleep. Impulses transmitted to and through the nerves by these sounds cause muscular movements which keep us from getting a real rest. On the other hand, the practice of silence is healing, soothing, and healthy. The sense of rest that results from the practice of complete silence is of utmost value. Now there is another factor in the search for inner peace that I must mention. Frequently I find that people who lack a sense of inner peace are victims of self-punishment. At some time in their life, they've committed a sin and are then haunted by a sense of guilt. Sometimes this type of person has sought divine forgiveness, and the good Lord, we know, always forgives someone who asks him and who means it. However, there is a curious quirk in the human personality that sometimes won't allow an individual to forgive himself. A person like this feels he deserves punishment and is therefore always anticipating punishment. As a result, he lives in constant apprehension that something bad is going to happen. In order to find peace under these circumstances, he feels he must intensify his activity. He thinks that hard work will give him some release from his sense of guilt. A physician told me that a number of cases of nervous breakdown in his practice were linked to such guilt feelings, where the patients unconsciously attempted to compensate by hectic overwork. Then they attributed their breakdown not to a sense of guilt, but to their overworked condition. This doctor told me that such a breakdown needn't happen if only the patient could be released from his guilt. Under such circumstances, peace of mind can be found by yielding the guilt as well as the tension it produces to the healing therapy of God. I once encountered an acquaintance at a quiet resort hotel. This was a high-pressured, hard-driving, and exceedingly nervous businessman. I found him sitting in the sun in a deck chair and said I was glad to see him relaxing in such a beautiful spot. Nervously, he replied, "I haven't any business being here. I have so much work to do at home. I'm under terrible pressure. I'm nervous, jumpy. I can't sleep. My wife insisted that I come down here for a week. The doctors say there's nothing wrong with me that right thinking and relaxation can't cure. But how in the world do I do that? I would do anything to get a sense of quiet inside myself." We talked a bit, and it came out that he was always worrying that something sinister was going to happen. For years, he had lived in a constant state of apprehension about something happening to his wife or his children or his home. It was not difficult to analyze this case. His trouble rose from a double source, from childhood insecurities and from later guilty experiences. His mother had always felt that something was going to happen, and he absorbed her anxiety feelings. Later, he committed some sins, and his subconscious mind insisted upon self-punishment. As a result of this unhappy combination, he was now suffering from a highly inflamed state of nervousness. Finishing our conversation, I stood beside his chair a moment. There was no one near, so I rather hesitantly suggested, "Would you by any chance like me to pray with you?" He nodded, and I put my hand on his shoulder and prayed, "Dear Jesus, as you healed people in the long ago and gave them peace, heal this man now. Give him fully of thy forgiveness and help him to forgive himself. Separate him from all his sins and let him know that you do not hold them against him. Set him entirely free from them. Then let thy peace flow into his mind, into his soul, and into his body." He looked up at me with a strange expression on his face and then turned away, for there were tears in his eyes. Months later, I ran into him in New York, and he said, "Something happened to me that day when you prayed for me. I felt a strange sense of quietness and peace," and he added, "healing." This man now goes to church regularly and reads the Bible every day. He follows the laws of God and has a great deal of driving force. This is a healthy, happy man. For now, he has peace in his heart and in his mind.
If you are having trouble finding peace of mind, here are a few exercises. 1. Every day, put aside 15 minutes for yourself when you can find absolute silence. Go alone into a quiet place and sit or lie down. Think as little as possible. Allow the silence to open you up to feelings of harmony and beauty. 2. From time to time during the day, practice concentrating on a selected series of peaceful thoughts. Think of your past as a painting from which you can choose the most serene moments you have ever experienced. Allow your mind to dwell in those scenes until you feel you are present in that place and absorbing its tranquility. 3. Practice the technique of repeating beautiful words out loud. Words have profound powers of suggestion, and there is healing in the very saying of them. 4. The words of the Bible are especially therapeutic. Drop them into your mind, allowing them to dissolve in your consciousness, replacing negative thoughts. When your daily pace is a frantic one, it's more important than ever to remember that peace of mind is essential to efficiency, no matter what you do. Dr. Peel's prescription for accomplishing more in your life is to relax for easy power through the healing properties of calmness and quiet.
Do you ever fume and fret? Here is a picture of yourself if you do. The word fume means to boil up, to blow off, to be agitated. It conjures up images of someone who is seething and distraught. The word fret is equally descriptive. It is reminiscent of a sick child in the night, a petulant and irritating half-cry, half-whine. To fret is a term usually used when talking about children, but unfortunately, it frequently describes the emotional reaction of many adults. The Bible advises us to fret not thyself. This is sound advice for people of our time. If we are to have power to live effectively, we just need to stop fuming and fretting and find instead real peace of mind. But how do you go about doing that? A first step is to reduce your pace, or at least the tempo of your pace. We don't usually realize how fast we're driving ourselves. Many people destroy their bodies by this pace, but even worse, they tear their minds and souls to shreds as well. The pace at which we live is determined by our thinking habits. It's possible for someone to live a quiet, physical existence and yet maintain a fast tempo emotionally. When the mind goes rushing on pell-mell from one feverish attitude to another, it becomes feverish too. This overstimulation produces fatigue, frustration, and emotional illness. And if this effect is so physically and emotionally pronounced, imagine what it does to that deep inner essence of the personality known as the soul. It is impossible to have peace of soul if one's tempo is so feverishly accelerated. God simply won't go that fast. He will not endeavor to keep up with you. He says, in effect, go ahead if you must with this foolish pace, and when you are worn out, I will offer you my healing. But I can make your life rich if only you will slow down and live and move and have your being in me. You see, God moves imperturbably, slowly, and with perfect organization. The only wise rate at which to live is at God's rate. God gets things done, and they are done right, and he does them without hurrying. He neither fumes nor frets. He is peaceful, and therefore very efficient. This same peace is offered to us. Peace I leave with you. My peace I give unto you. Sometimes I wonder if this generation isn't so accustomed to tension and noise that many aren't comfortable without it. The deep quietness of woods and valleys, so well known to our forefathers, is almost an alien state to them. It seems that the tempo of their lives doesn't allow them to draw upon the marvelous sources of peace and quietness that the physical world offers. One summer afternoon, my wife and I went for a long walk in the woods. We were stopping at a beautiful lake mountain house, which is set in one of the finest natural parks in this country, 7,500 acres of virgin mountainside, in the middle of which is a lake that is set like a gem in the forest. Here you come out of the deep woods onto some noble promontory and rest your eyes on great valleys set among hills, rock-ribbed and ancient as the sun. These woods, mountains, and valleys constitute what ought to be a sure retreat from every confusion in this world. On this afternoon as we walked, there was a mixture of summer showers and sunlit hours. We were drenched and started to fret about it a bit because it took the press out of our clothes. Then we told each other that it doesn't hurt a human being to get drenched with clean rainwater, that the rain feels cool and fresh on one's face, and that you can always sit in the sun and dry yourself out. So we walked under the trees and talked, and then fell silent. We were listening deeply to the quietness. In a strict sense, the woods are never still. There is tremendous activity always in the process. But on this beautiful afternoon, nature's sounds were quiet, harmonious. Nature was laying its hand of healing quietness upon us, and we could actually feel the tension being drawn off. Just as we were falling under this spell, the faint sounds of something passing for music came to us. It was a nervous, high-strung music, so popular these days. And presently through the woods came three young people, and one of them was lugging a portable radio. They were three young city people out for a walk in the woods, and tragically enough were bringing their noise along with them. They were nice folk, too, for they stopped and we had a pleasant talk with them. It occurred to me to ask him to turn that thing off and listen to the music of the woods. But I didn't feel it was my business to instruct them, and finally they went on their way. We commented on the loss they were incurring, that they could pass through this peacefulness and not give ear to the music that is as old as the world, harmony and melody the like of which man has never equaled, the song of the wind through the trees, the sweet notes of birds singing their hearts out, the whole background of the music of the spheres. Remember the words of Jesus, "Come ye yourselves apart into a desert place and rest a while." Frequently enough, I've had to remind myself to practice this truth. But we must discipline ourselves to quietness if we expect its benefits in our lives. To help reduce the tension that seems to dominate people everywhere, you can start by reducing your pace. To do that, you will need to slow down and quiet down. Do not fume. Do not fret. Practice being peaceful. Practice the peace of God, which passeth all understanding. Then note the quiet sense of power that wells up within you. A physician gave some rather unusual advice to a patient of his, one of those aggressive, go-getter types of businessmen. This man had been telling him that he takes his briefcase home with him every night, packed with important work that must get done right away. When the doctor asked if someone else couldn't help him with it, the man snapped, "Nope. I'm the only one who can do it. Everything depends on me." The doctor asked, "If I write a prescription, will you follow it?" This, believe it or not, was the prescription. His patient was to take off 2 hours every working day and go for a long walk. Then he was to take off a half day a week and spend that half day in a cemetery. In astonishment, the patient demanded, "Why should I spend a half day in a cemetery?" "Because," answered the doctor, "I want you to wander around and look at the gravestones of men who are there permanently. I want you to meditate on the fact that many of them are there because they thought, even as you do, that the whole world rested on their shoulders. Meditate on the solemn fact that when you get there permanently, the world will go on just the same." There are times when it is essential to check our headlong pace, and it must be emphasized that the only way to stop is to stop. Believe me, I know personally from experience. I once went to a certain city to give a lecture, and was met at the plane by a committee. I was rushed to a bookstore where I had an autographing party, and then to another bookstore where another autographing party was held. Then they rushed me to a luncheon. After rushing through the luncheon, I was rushed to a meeting. After the meeting, I was rushed back to the hotel, where I changed my clothes and was rushed back to a reception, where I met several hundred people and drank 3 glasses of fruit punch. Then I was rushed back to the hotel and told I had 20 minutes to dress for dinner. When I was getting dressed, the phone rang and somebody said, "Hurry, hurry, we must rush down to dinner." Excitedly, I chattered, "I will rush right down." I rushed from the room and was so excited that I could scarcely get the key into the lock. Hastily, I checked myself to make sure I was completely dressed and rushed toward the elevator. All of a sudden, I stopped. I was out of breath. I asked myself, just what is this all about? What is the meaning of this ceaseless rush, this is ridiculous. Then I declared independence and said, I don't care if I go to dinner or not. I do not care whether I make a speech. I do not have to go to this dinner, and I do not have to give a speech. So deliberately and slowly, I walked back to my room and took my time about opening the door. I telephoned the man downstairs and said, if you want to eat, go ahead. If you want to save a place for me, I will be down after a while when I'm good and ready. But I'm not going to rush anymore. So I removed my coat, sat down, took off my shoes, put my feet up on the table, and just sat. Then I opened the Bible and very slowly read aloud the 121st Psalm. I will lift up mine eyes unto the hills, from whence cometh my help. I closed the book and had a little talk with myself, saying, come on now, son, start living a slower pace and a more relaxed life. And then I affirmed, God is here and his peace is touching me. I don't need anything to eat, I reasoned. I eat too much anyway. Besides, the dinner will probably not be very good, and if I am quiet now, I will give a better speech at 8 o'clock. So I sat there resting and praying for a while. I shall never forget the sense of peace and personal mastery I had when I walked out of that room. I had the glorious feeling of having overcome something, of having taken control of myself emotionally. And when I reached the dining room, the others had just finished the first course. All I missed was the soup, which by general consent was no great loss. This incident was an amazing encounter with the healing presence of Almighty God. I gained this experience simply by stopping, by quietly reading the Bible, by sincerely praying, and by thinking some peaceful thoughts for a few moments. To attain emotional control, the daily practice of healing techniques is essential. Emotional control cannot be gained in any magical or easy way. The only sure method is by working at it regularly and by developing creative faith. To develop a calm control, it is necessary to think calmness. For as I've said before, the body responds sensitively to the type of thoughts that pass through the mind. It is also true that the mind can be quieted by first making the body quiet. Don't pace the floor. Don't wring your hands. Don't pound or shout or argue or walk up and down. Don't let yourself get worked up into a dither. I was once in a meeting where a discussion was going on which finally became rather bitter. Tempers were getting frayed, and some of the participants were decidedly on edge. Sharp remarks were exchanged. Suddenly, one man got up, took off his coat, opened his collar, and lay down on a couch. Everyone was astonished, and someone asked if he felt ill. No, he said, I feel fine, but I'm beginning to get mad. And I have learned that it is difficult to get mad lying down. We all laughed and the tension was broken. So I urge you to slow down. For whatever you really want will be there when you arrive, if you work toward it without stress, without pressing. If proceeding under God's guidance and in his smooth and unhurried tempo it is not there, then it was not supposed to be there. If you miss it, perhaps you should have missed it. Try to develop a normal, natural, God-ordered pace. Practice and preserve mental quiet. learn the art of letting go of all nervous excitement. To do this, stop at intervals and affirm, I now relinquish nervous excitement. It is flowing from me now. I am at peace.
If you have a tendency to fume and fret, here are some exercises that can help you achieve a more peaceful inner tempo. 1. Sit relaxed in a chair. Yield yourself completely to the chair. Starting with your toes and proceeding to the top of your head, conceive of every part of your body as relaxing. Affirm this relaxed state by saying, my toes are relaxed, my fingers are relaxed, my facial muscles are relaxed, and so on. 2. Think of your mind as the surface of a lake in a storm, tossed by waves and whipped by the wind. Then imagine the waves subside and the surface placid and smooth. 3. Spend 2 or 3 minutes thinking of the most beautiful and peaceful scenes you have ever beheld. A mountain at sunset, for example, or a deep valley filled with the hush of early morning, or a woods at noonday, or moonlight upon rippling waters. In your memory, relive these scenes. 4. Make a mental list of times in your life when you've been conscious of God's watchful care. Recall how He brought things out right and took care of you when you were worried and anxious. Then recite aloud this line from an old hymn. So long thy power hath kept me, sure it still will lead me on. 5. Repeat the following quotation, which has a great power to relax and quiet the mind. Thou wilt keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on thee. Repeat this aloud, if possible, so that by the end of the day you will have said it many times. Conceive of these words as active, vital substances that permeate your mind and send a healing balm to every area of your heart and mind.